Hello, hello, hello. This is Truth Be Told. This is Dr. Walter Acca.
Hey, this is Leroy Horton.
And we have the honor to guest the pleasure of actually having Dr. Omar Akmal come back on again. We definitely appreciate you
Indeed.
doing that. We appreciate you continuing this saga with us, where we're going to be talking today about a specialist owning GP offices. And something that we talked about off camera was we noticed that a lot of these corporate, a lot of these when we go to like conferences, they basically talk about practice ownership, but not from, oh, you own your own specialty office. They more talk about owning GP offices so you can control the flow of referrals, you know? And so you actually took that on and started doing that. And so we're going to actually talk about that. So Dr. Leroy, do you want to start off with the first question to Dr. Akmal?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for jumping back on with us. So I've kind of been in the ownership world myself, but I would like to hear what were some of your motivations and what are some of the benefits you've seen from not just owning an office, but actually kind of diversifying and owning a general office where you'll have kind of oversight over a greater breadth of procedures.
Thanks so much for having me on again, guys. I appreciate that. So I would say, like, in the why of it, there'll probably be like three parts here. The first thing, kind of what Dr. Acca alluded to, is this control over referrals, right? So if you're in a major metro city where you have so many people and so many practitioners are already doing their own GP stuff, and then GP stuff and are doing specialty stuff, and on top of that, you have all these established referrals who are not necessarily going to give up their referrals that easily. So it's a tougher thing. So I had to figure out a way of how can I actually have my practice set up. The second thing I think, and this was a concept that I kind of heard about and I thought might be a good way to kind of start on. The second thing would be that the second thing ends up being is like how the income aspect of how that is. And Chris, give me 1 second. Mom. Apologies. That's what happens when your mom decided to stop by.
Do
My
not cut that out. That was priceless.
apologies on that.
Do not edit
I
that out.
barely before I
I was going
started.
to edit it out, but I might not
I
now.
was literally like thinking, Mom, I'm gonna be doing this for about an hour. Can you just hang out in your room? And she's like, yeah, on my iPad. And then she's like,
That's all good. What's going on, Mom? Listen, we do this. This is why I
I'm
love
off.
this. This is why I love this, because I've had my kids literally jump on while I'm recording, like they could care less.
Oh my gosh.
So this is it right here. And
I
I'm
literally
actually
threw a
going,
little
I'm going to
piece
keep
of,
this.
I threw a little screw over there to kind of get her to be like, stop. And she just like picked it up and put it to the side and just kept doing what she was doing.
She's like, why is he so messy?
I
But
know.
all right. Let's
Okay, so
focus.
one being, sorry, one being for control of referral sources, right? Second thing ends up being is basically the consequent ownership is increased in your overall yearly income was the second point. Because of ownership, of course, there's the profit margin of the practice that you'll also gain into. And the third thing ends up being is basically learning new skills. Because after over the course of years and years of doing dentistry, it becomes somewhat repetitive. And when it becomes repetitive, you lose the newness of it. And so because of that, what you want is you want to kind of experience, learn something new. A lot of dentists, I think, after a decade in, they start picking up other things like finance, like flipping houses, doing like woodworking. It's just we're very hands-on people and we're very skill-based people and we enjoy learning new things. And so I think that was the third thing. I wanted to just try something new after being in doing the same thing for the last 7, 8 years.
So let me ask you this then. And I'm going to try to break down what you said. So one, did you actually find that you made more money having this ownership? Because you took on debt. You had to have taken on debt in order to buy this practice, right? Did you find that, oh man, after I did this, this was awesome. I made more money. Did you also find that your referrals increased? Or, you know, we talked about it in the previous episode that you really can't live off of one referral. It's multiple people referring to you. So do you find that your referral base has increased after teaching your the people that work for you, the GPs that work for you, how to refer perio? Did you notice that that actually worked?
So if you're asking as far as like when I was doing my traveling thing after teaching them, like the individual offices, how well they work.
Well, I'm talking about now that you have this practice. One, did you find that you're making more money doing less? Right? That's all we want, right? We always want to make,
Yes.
we
So
want to
what,
make more money doing less.
right. So your question is like after I bought the practice, like am I, did I achieve that goal which I thought about, like how I
Yes.
set this up? Yes.
Less
No,
work, more
not at
money.
all. Not at
So
all. Not at all. So that was
it's
one.
more, it's is it, so hold on, hold on. I want people to realize this. So you're telling me that you're not working less and making more? Isn't that the
No,
goal?
not at
Isn't that the
all.
goal of owning practice? Is
Yeah, so this
See,
is.
I was about to call him on that because I was going to see where it went. Because, some people play the role. Oh, I bought
That's
an
it.
office and I was making $2 million a year.
That's
I
it.
was. I'm glad he was honest because I was about to call him out on that. So,
Oh,
yeah,
no.
please expand on.
Absolutely
You didn't
not.
buy yourself a higher income right away.
I did not.
Okay.
I dropped in income like at least by 50% for the first. And like this was one of those things that actually like, so I purchased it off of a good friend of mine, and like he was trying to get me into it for a while because he's like, hey, this is actually ownership is great. It goes this, it's and all the kind of things I talked about. And then when I was finally ready, it was like he's like, okay, very quickly, you need to understand for the next few years, you're gonna work harder than you've ever worked before, and you're gonna make less money than you've ever made before. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I see the numbers, like, and I don't do like the practice, I'm not the GP. Like, fine, even if I'll just do my one day a week, like I was always doing, and the thing would just run itself magically. Yeah, that was very wrong. That was very, very wrong. But this actually reminds me of like, because what it ends up being is like, remember when you took organic chemistry? The reason organic chemistry is so hard is not specifically because the concepts are that hard. It's because you're learning a brand new language, trying to methylacetate. You're like, what the words have never come to your mind before.
Right.
It's the same thing when you go into ownership, there's multiple other aspects that you got to learn about. Like, you got to learn all about accounting, like all the different things. What's an AR? What's all these things? You got to figure out tax. What are tax forms? Like you're getting letters from your county every 2 days. So like you don't understand what classifications, tax classifications are. Then you got to figure out with larger government aspect of that, hey, you have to have this entity registered with this person. And so every month you're just like, wait, what government? Well, what does government have to do with this? And so all the government aspect, you got to learn all this. So there's all this initial learning curve of owning a practice is very high because you're literally learning a brand new language and a brand new profession, which is because we learned the profession of dentistry. This is the profession of business, which is a whole different profession.
Well,
And if you want
okay.
to be a
If
physician,
somebody could push back and say, "Well, why don't you hire somebody for that?" You know how like whenever you go and you want to buy like a rental property, they're like, "Oh, it's easy. All you have to do is just hire a managing company to do all the stuff for you, right? Why don't you just hire accountants and managing companies and hire a good office manager that does all that stuff for you so you can be on your boat, in the Bahamas doing whatever you want to do."
I hate that question. God, I hate that question. People make it sound so simple. Oh, just hire somebody to do that for you.
Did you ever look into that, Dr. Horton, to see if it was
No, but do you see what I'm saying, though? This is what people
like
say. They're like,
that?
it could be easy. All you gotta do is hire somebody for it. So let's talk about that. Like,
And it's
I'm gonna
true. It
ask
is
you, why
true.
don't you
Because
just hire somebody?
and that's the issue, is because it sounds like that would be the answer. And guess what? There's companies all over the place. They're like, just give us money and we'll make you billions of dollars. You're scrolled through what's it called, Instagram, and they're like, hey, 2 hours a day, $10,000 a month. I can teach you. So there's always someone who's ready to be like, just give me money and I'll do exactly what you want from me, except they don't. Because the thing is, every business is so personalized, so intricate, and trying to systems have been created, they've been set up. It's a machine that's working, right? So without you personally knowing the machine and every single aspect of that machine, every component, this is how this is working, this is how this is working, you have to at any given second be able to troubleshoot and jump in. So someone who's running from remote and is not present there all the time just isn't going to be able to do it to the same level that you want it to be. Secondarily, if they want to do it, guess what? They're taking a big chunk of your equity as well. Like if you allow some of the bigger people like Heartland, Aspen, those big companies, and they'll be like, listen, you just be your doctor person and we'll just take care of admin for you. I have had a couple of friends who've done it, and they've been happy with it. But same point, you lose a certain, you go back to the issue of now you don't have independence anymore, and you don't have the same level of equity. So then it comes to the point, like, and like that control aspect that you wanted in ownership, that I want 100% control of everything, you've lost that now with any of these companies. Because any reasonable one, I think, would want a level of equity inside your business as well. So it's a very difficult way. It's not something that's like Dr. Horton said, that, oh, just hire someone and go to Bahamas. That does not work that way.
Now, one thing that a lot of people don't understand. Let's say you take out a $500,000 loan to buy a practice, right? Your monthly payment on a 10-year standardized note is probably going to be like 5 grand, right? Just throwing numbers out. Now, when that's paid off, that is extra money in your pocket. But people don't understand that that loan payment, even though your income may look greater on paper, by the time you factor out your loan payment, all your expenses, like you said, your income sometimes may take a drop. Any entrepreneur, adventure, it's a 10-year grind before you really are somewhat on autopilot, really making much more income. How have you projected your trajectory to be? Have you kind of been in what I'm talking about, or do you feel like you found a lane to make that a little faster for you to get to that point where debt's paid off, it's on autopilot as much as possible?
Yeah, I think I didn't know about the 10-year grind. Like I honestly started, I thought maybe 6 months and everything would be done. Like I had way too much confidence in myself and way little knowledge about what business is all about. I was like, and that was one of my issues, was I think because of what you're talking about, is it going to be a 10-year thing? I have not been able, I can see that's probably what it's going to be. And it's not like you buy it and next year, you're taking all three, because I hear that about one of my other associates. She ended up buying another practice and she's like, oh, she's struggling, of course, brand new, starting up her startup. And she's like, okay, it's okay. Maybe another year or two, they say that I can hire an associate and then they can take over and I can just hang out. And I'm like, man, the amount of misinformation that is out there by salespeople to dentists, and just like, don't worry, just do it. Like, and everyone just accepts it. And I think this is where, and I believe Dr. Akka has kind of spoken about this earlier, is the importance of mentorship, is like the need of having someone who's been in the game for a while, anyone older. Like if you're coming in, find someone who's in their like 40s, 50s, who's been, running dentistry for a while, and then sit down and buy them a big steak dinner, right? Ribeye. Like make sure it's make it there to worth the time. And that would be my advice to anyone who's thinking, is find someone who has it, make it worth their time. And then be like, hey, what do you think? And then they will just break it down for you real well. Because I think most doctors will tell you the truth. Like you go to any practice management person or practice acquisition firm, everyone will paint the rosiest picture. Hey, a year you can be in the Bahamas, you can be taking, weekly vacations. Incorrect. You do not take vacations once you own a practice. It's not a thing.
And this is the problem. This is what I mean. I'm glad you spoke on to the whole, kind of making everything rosy and oh, all you have to do is be an owner. I find that to be such a just such a almost a I'm gonna say a lie. I find it to be a lie because ownership, I honestly think, is probably one of the hardest things. You're never on vacation. Even if you are on vacation, you're dealing with a lot of stuff. You're always having to have somebody call you asking you for advice and, oh, what do we do about this? What do we do about this? And you're right. You could hire somebody to take some of that off for you. But when you do that, you increase something. And Dr. Hort, you can speak to this. You increase, increase in theft. You increase in basically
Overhead.
overhead. Exactly. We don't talk about that, right? So now the amount that you take home is going to be less if you're talking about profits, right? When it comes to your periodontist, you own a GP office. How do you talk to or have communications with the GPs about their daily grind? How do you make sure that they benefit? Because a lot of people, just like with anything, they need to benefit. Even as a specialist, if somebody's referring something to you, they're expecting something in return. Let's be honest. Like, if they're referring an implant to you, they want to make sure that you're not going to do the crown for that implant. You want to send it back because they benefit somehow, right? That's just dentists. That's just human nature. How do you make sure that these general dentists that work for you, one, are okay with working for you, and two, are okay with making sure that you meet your goals and expectations that you set for your practice?
Yeah, and I think that you actually hit the nail on the head. It's like the relationship between you and the GP, right? Because one thing, if a GP is working with another GP, both of you guys are working, you're both producing, and they're like, oh, okay, we're doing this together. It's another thing if you just walk in one day, because every GP, every associate comes in knowing, oh, it says 33% is my take. That means they're taking 66% home of everything I do. So they already have that thing in their mind, right? Which is completely incorrect.
Right.
Now, on top of that, they're like, he's not even working. Like, what the hell? And he's taking, like, this is BS. So that relationship, you're right. It took me a minute to figure out what. And one thing I had to do was completely move the focus of the practice to the GP to let them know, like, hey, this is yours. Because in the beginning, what I was doing was I was putting equal ads for implants and osseous and some for Invisalign. But see, even though, like, we were getting patients, the associate would feel some kind of way. It's like, because they always have to see that, hey, because they'll always be on a level of, like, they'll be hesitant about their relationship in the practice unless you make the practice about that GP. So now everything, I'm doing this in the same way as any other normal practice would work, where all the marketing, everything is for this practice as a GP practice. And I just happen to come in, and if there's stuff that's in there, I'm able to get that. But because I've taught the GP a lot about what to look for, the amount of things that they refer to me increases significantly. Yet they still see that the whole marketing machine has nothing to do with perio. It's everything to do with general practice. So it's emergencies, you know, bread and butter dentistry, Invisalign, stuff like, so I'm not doing any marketing towards perio or perio implants at all at this moment. Wow. Just like same reasons, because I want the dentist themselves to feel. And of course, I also give them a lot of ability to interact with the office managers and the vendors. So for example, our Invisalign, the vendor Carolyn, she's fantastic and she's always coming over. I don't even talk to her. I'm like, you talk to the doctor and the office manager, and I've given them free way. I'm like, hey, this is how much budget we can put towards whatever. You guys do whatever you want to do. So this gives them a level of ownership over how they're getting income as well. And that's the other thing that I'm trying to do, is slowly let go, slowly stop micromanaging and give them more and more control over their own income.
Now, are you doing any general dentistry yourself?
Not at the moment, but right now I don't do anything. But initially when I had purchased it, I did realize that, because immediately we started going through some transitions, one of our GPs, she became pregnant, and so she was going to be taking months off, and I was like, ah, crap, because the practice still has to run. Mm-hmm. So either I would have had to hire someone or I had to get back into it. And so even though I'd done AGD like 7-8 years ago, I was like, all right, let's get back into it. It took me a minute to kind of get back my hand skills, but then I took a few of the courses. I think if you're a specialist who owns a GP practice, an important thing is you need to know GP. Like, at least bread and butter, you need to be comfortable with that. And you need to be able to do, you know, at least like with, if endo comes in, you don't have to do the full endo, but you better be able to do the pulpectomy. You need to be able to do a crown prep. And so everyone, when they heard that, oh, Omer's doing all this stuff as well, they're like, what? You're doing this? Why? I'm like, it's less stressful for me to just go in and do it than to try to figure out who I can find to bring in here. So that's another thing as a specialist, if you own a GP practice, understand it's going to be to your benefit to just be able to jump right back and do stuff.
So do you think that it's actually feasible to have your own specialty practice here on one side and then have one or two GP offices and really run that one or two GP offices to its optimal level? Do you think that's possible to do both? Because you're saying that you have to jump in sometimes whenever, like, you know, a doctor's call sick or a doctor's out for a while, a doctor leaves. So how could you do both? You know what I mean? I want people to kind of get an idea of like what's reality and what's really not.
I would say this goes to Dr. Horton's, like, the 10-year case, right? I'm like 3 years into it. So I'm still making tons of mistakes, trying to figure out how to, delegation is, I'm not as optimized on as I would like to be, right? So basically something happens, I just go in and do everything, because part of it is like, I want to understand the practice. So even if a chair goes down, I'll start opening it up and I'll spend like 3 hours with a manual trying to figure out which hose went from somewhere else, right? Part of it is like, I want to just understand stuff and I want to just keep calling people. At some point, I would like to get to a point where when that happens, the amount of time and effort I spend doing that is not as important as I'm me doing surgery. So that will happen at some point, I'm hoping, but at this point, it's not something you can do. Like right now, I do have to be ready to jump in and take care of all the GPs because it's not fully under my control yet. Or like Dr. Horton said, it's not running on its own yet. It's going to take a minute. And like, and to do that, same thing, you have to have kind of like what you were alluding to with your that, hey, people steal from you, all these management companies, because if you, the more control you give up for like, even for this, like, hey, I can make it. So like, hey, I'm going to let my office manager find her own GP, get set up, and it's her job to do all that stuff. And I trust her and I pay her extra money to do that. I don't have control anymore. I don't know what she's going to, like, I don't know if she has the same ability to pick up a GP as I do, right? Like, can she really figure out, is he going to, he or she going to be a good fit or not? And so the more you say, give up control, I think in industry, that's what happens, is the more control you give up, the more amount that you have to have, the quantity of practices has to go up. So instead of having your one practice that makes $1 million a year, what ends up happening is you have five practices that make 400,000 a year, right? So the thing is, the efficiency of your profitability, I think, is going to decrease as more practice you get, but because of the volume, you increase in income.
Okay.
That's how that, I think that is how that works out. And if you're, and that was my expectation, was like every month I should increase exactly the same way, because now I have a GP practice and I'm in here. It should increase like tangentially, but it doesn't do that because you're giving up a lot of things that you yourself did to make money to do other stuff now. And so that income level decreases for you. But now gotcha. The other aspect, it's increasing, but it's multipliable. Like it's scalable, right? So now by having this other GP practice, even though I make less money, theoretically, if I can get the systems working, this thing is scalable. I can have multiple practices. So let's assume I bought $1 million practice. By figure doing this, everything, making it so I don't have to be there, now it's down to 700,000, right? But I've learned a skill set where if I can build like 3-4 other practices that also don't work as optimized as that $1 million practice, but now I have 4 or 5 of them.
So this basically what you're saying is you figure out a system. And once that system is kind of optimized, you can put it to any other practice that you would own. Correct. Yeah,
that's a great way of thinking about that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and that's something, if you watch that episode with my former business partner, that's kind of what he did, where he had multiple offices. What he ended up doing was getting partners in each office, because no one's ever going to work as hard as someone that's invested, right? And like you said, even though your profit margin goes down because now someone else is sharing your equity, they're going to be driven, motivated, also sharing that risk and liability in these multiple locations. And the more locations you have, then you're able to build up that income that's a bit more passive, because you have not just autopilot, but you have actual pilots in there that are invested in the plane, that are helping drive it. But it's still a headache to a certain extent. You know, that income isn't free or passive. You know, as you can tell, ownership is such a unique beast that unless you've been in it, you truly don't realize. I was watching my my great niece and nephew, were watching them this weekend, and all their cousins came over, and I liken owning to trying to do actual work when you got 10 kids going wild in the house. Everyone's vying for your attention. Everyone needs something. Something's always broken. Two people are fighting, but you're still trying to work. And that's what I felt like practice was, is like, I'm trying to do dentistry, but I got to multitask 10 other different things, fixing chairs, managing time off, grievances, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I don't envy the position you're in, but I can tell you that with time, you're going to figure out that system that works for you. And it's going to be a lot smoother sailing, with enough time.
So here's a question. One thing that I've noticed is whenever a GP brings in a periodontist, an orthodontist, oral surgeon, whatever it may be, other GPs are very hesitant to refer to that specialist in that office because they feel like if I refer my patient, that office is going to keep my patient. Do you find that other GPs kind of don't want to refer to that office where you're at because of that same mindset? Like, oh, if I take that patient in there, they're going to definitely keep that patient. Have you noticed anything like that?
Yeah, 100%. And I tried to curb it. Like, even when I went out to all the referrals, I wrote them like a formal letter saying that, hey, listen, you send anyone from your office, we will even refuse to accept them as a GP patient in our office if you refer them to us, right? And a sign did with me, my name. So like, hey, they would even actually have legal recourse if they opted to do anything, right? I tried to give them as much security as possible. No. Like, I would say primarily most of the referrals that I'm getting, it's based because of someone was referred to another perio, but they're out of network and I'm in network. And that's the only reason they're coming to me. I did have one or two maybe that tried in the beginning, but the thing was, it was so random and off time. I think they just kind of tried it just to kind of see how it was. But I think it's a difficult thing to do. You have to kind of go into direct marketing at this point. Like, once you do a GP specialty office, unless you're such a highly specialized, like an all-on-four clinic or something, or you make your niche. And I think that's one thing I realized is working in this heavily concentrated community, you got to figure out something different than everyone else. And it sounds like such a passe thing to say because, well, everyone says, fine, how much different things can you do with dentistry? But if you can figure out the one thing that and just kind of market that one thing, that's a way to bring yourself in. And that's where direct marketing happens. I think I have not been able to successfully get a referral model paid and done with the GP aspect. But I think I knew going in that that was probably going to happen anyways.
So do you feel like in order for you to get back to Perio, you're going to need multiple GP offices so that you can then again funnel all those patients to you as a referral base? Does that make sense? So in order for you to go back to being maybe full-time Perio, once you have your system down, you might need multiple GP offices that you control, that you own, so that then you can get back to the perio aspect of it, or that's not something that you're even interested in doing anymore.
Yeah, so that was 100% my long-term goal, was to set up like four or five offices and then have my own perio office. And then I don't need to ever deal with another, or not deal with, but I don't have to deal with all the issues of referrals, right? And I figured that might work. Yeah, because if you have five practices and then you just got random direct marketing, that's enough to keep you as a full-time perio, right? Going back to what Dr. Horton was talking about a second ago, right? Was that, hey, the more stuff you do, now I have to do this, and I have to do this, and I have to do this. It reminds me of like when I was senior, or not senior, sorry, junior. Junior, I was about to become senior in dental school. And the senior year is just supposed to be clinicals, right? And then when we came in, all of a sudden they told us, oh, and this you have to do, and this, and this. And like boards are coming up. And I was sitting there complaining to one of my attendings, like, wait, I thought fourth year was supposed to be the easy year. Like, what the hell? And he just kind of looked at me and like he turned to his other attending and they just both laughed. And he's like, no, you've chosen a path that every year is going to be harder than the year before. It doesn't matter what you do. As long as you want to keep moving forward, it's going to get harder every single day. So, and that's the kind of thing that I'm kind of realizing after bought this practice, that every next level up that you go, there's so much more work. There's so much more work. And yes, you do acclimate to it. So your question as to, and it, at some point it just becomes a normal, right? Like same with us when we went from college to dental school, we're like, oh my God, this is so hard. And then we're like, okay, whatever. Came from there to real life and marriage. Oh my God, it's even more work. You just keep picking on more work each step up that you go. So that you just have to accept. But then you decide like how much more do you want to do? And to your question of like, hey, you think you're gonna keep doing it? I don't know anymore. Like at this point, like I'm also getting into my early 40s, and I'm like, how much more gas do I have to like start another endeavor? And like, do I really love working this hard? Right? Because there are, I know some friends of mine, I'm sure everyone over here knows some friend who's just like, how do you just not do anything other than work, right? And those people exist. Those are the Elon Musks of the world, right? Those are the Bezos, like, and you got to figure out, like, is that what you want? Or do you want to play video games for a couple hours from time to time? Do you want to be able to go out on hikes from time to time? And I think that's an important thing that when you talk about business ownership, you got to think about is what kind of a life do you want before you decide to go into the concept of an ownership?
Okay.
How much of, do you think you're influenced by the keeping up with the Joneses, right? You go to a convention. Oh, I got these many offices. I got this. I'm doing that. And because I found myself even at the AAP talking to some colleagues, and I'm just like, your competitive juices start flowing, and you're like, I
I'm
should
not
get
doing
back.
enough.
Yeah, I'm not doing enough. Do you feel like you're influenced at all by your contemporaries in what decisions you've made as far as ownership or, kind of career path?
Oh, heavily. I think heavily. It has to do, I think, primarily with the fact that that's who we've been taught to be competitive, right? Like every year from high school, it's got to be like, oh, what do I have to do? I have to be better than everyone around me to get to the next level. Okay, done. And that's what you do from high school onwards, college. You got to be the best, like not best the best, but you have to beat a lot of
Yeah.
people. So that competition to get to the next level, it's so ingrained in your mind. Is that even once you're done with the actual training and now you're in real life, it doesn't switch off. It and this is one of the, I think that was one of my detriments over the last 6, 7 years. And I would say more towards like a concept of mental health, even, right? Is that this constant every few months I go and run into somebody of mine or someone else, and they're like, oh, I just bought two more practices. And I'm like, ah, I'm not there. What the hell? I have to be there as well. And
That's
so the
it.
choices and decisions I was making was not, I mean, yes, I wanted it also, but every time I talked to someone who was in any way doing better than me, it would light a fire under me. And it was discomfort. It wasn't like passion, like, oh my God, this is gonna be great. It was more like, oh no, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And I had to have many talks with my brother, and like he's an anesthesiologist, and he's like, stop, look at your retirement account, you're fine, you've got enough, you're exactly on the path that you're supposed to be, why are you freaking out? And I'm like, but he has 5 times as much as I do, and that
That's
person has 8 times as much, and they have this much, and they all
it.
start at the exact level as I am, we all
That's it.
graduated, and like, how is this okay? And that's, I think, that competitive drive is something that causes. That's what I'm saying is that there's the Elon Musks and like, the Bezos, that's what they're gonna do, they're gonna do. But if you're not that and you're trying to compete against that, that's where you can get into a lot of trouble, I think, with your life.
Leroy, you said something that's actually very interesting because don't forget, right? Everybody has Instagram, everybody has Facebook, TikTok, and people, I consider that almost like every time I go under, I feel like it's a lie. I feel like everything I'm watching is a lie. I have yet to see any truth because everybody, basically wants to be an influencer. So they want to show how glorious their life is. If I could, I could make this like as glorious as possible by like opening up slowly and zooming in on it. You know what I mean? Like doing all this ridiculous stuff. Everybody's like, God, I didn't even know I wanted one of those Russian dolls, but now I do because of how amazing he made it look. You know what I mean? And that's the full, what you said is absolutely correct, man. A lot of people give this falsehood of look how great I'm doing, but have you ever sat down and talked to them And if you do, you realize, man, your life sucks. Like, I'm not sure if I want that millions of dollars, because I like spending time with friends. I like spending time with family and stuff like that. And having, like you said, Dr. Akmal, having multiple offices comes with multiple problems. And there are people that love that, but there are people that are like, nah, this is just not for me. You know, so we'll wrap it up by asking you this one question. And Dr. Leroy, you can also kind of put in another question here. But for me, my question to you is, was it worth it? Owning a practice versus traveling, right? Which one would you, if you had to do it all over again, would you just stick to just doing the traveling perio thing? Or would you say, no, I'm glad that I bought this practice and I'm running this? Which one was more beneficial for you?
So I have thought about this.
Good.
And no, not just for this podcast. Like, this thing that I've kind of thought about. Just as a, I think as an adult, you kind of think about your past and think, like, was that a mistake? Was this not a mistake? What does this lead to? So I made less money in the last 3 years than if I would have just kept working the way I had before, 100%. But you think about it in this terms. You went through a pandemic, right? So for 2 years of just sitting at home, not doing, everything was shut down. There were a few people who took amazing advantage of it and used those to learn new skill sets and find new things. A lot of people just didn't do crap. Mm-hmm. So the way I look at this is like, if you can learn something from the mistakes of your past, right? Even if they didn't work out exactly the way you had, and it gives you a new knowledge set, I don't think it's a waste of time. Like, would I have not done this? If I had to redo this, would I not do this? No, I would still do this, because I think over the last 3 years, there's other lessons and knowledge that I gained through this that were far more important than like whatever income that I've lost during this time.
Got you. All right.
And trying to figure out like what, like, and I think that's where trying to move away from being income-based in our end goals is something that's a challenge for, I think, all people, especially like with the online thing, and you see everything that's online is money driven, right?
Yeah.
So if that's where it is, and like, you got to kind of get rid of that concept. And so, hey, the last 2 years, if the only thing I'm measuring it is loss of money, it was a failure. But did I learn a lot of stuff? And now I'm at a better, even a better place. And now I can actually reevaluate which way I want to go from here onwards. I can see this working, but I also understand that moving from here to like 5 practices, I don't know if 100% of that's on my on my plate. Well,
you learned that, yeah, that might not be for you.
yeah, no, because I didn't.
Dr. Horton?
I not so much a question, I would say a bit of advice from, you know, someone that's done it is, I'm watching this show called Lawman Bass Reeves on Amazon, right? It's about this black ex-slave that becomes a sheriff. And what they would do when they were deputized, they would hire on posse men, which kind of formed the legal posse, right? Partners. And I think that's where I would see, or I would advise anyone now that's going into ownership, is it's such an isolating position to be an owner of a business, is find a partner, whether it's one of your GPs, someone that's going to share the burden, share the load, share the journey with you. Because otherwise it can be lonely. It's a rocky, rough road that, you know, ultimately, if you put in the work, you'll be successful. But, you know, that's what my business partner did with me. But he was a little older and, you know, kind of phased out in the second half of my ownership. And I think I would have been happier in that second half had I had someone that was in my cohort, my demographic of age, that was sharing that burden and, you know, giving me that camaraderie, that friendship, that brotherhood, sisterhood, that I would have needed to be more happy as an owner. So that's what I would say. I mean, it seems like you got a good circle of people that, you know, if you can find someone that can share this load, yeah, you're going to be giving up some equity, but especially if you're going to branch out into multiple offices, you may need that person riding shotgun with you that's ride or die, because they got skin in the game as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You know, honestly, this was awesome. I definitely appreciate both of you as always. You know, before we go, Dr. Akmal, I want you to kind of give us any advice that you would want to give to a young doctor that wants to be like you. They've listened to you and they're like, you know what? Despite everything that he said about ownership and the toughness that goes along with it, I still want to do this. So what advice would you give them?
Are you talking about as a periodontist trying to do the GP route what I'm talking about?
As a periodontist trying to do a GP route. That, yeah, as a periodontist doing a GP, as a periodontist that has an ownership stake in a GP practice. Yeah.
So there would be two things. If you're a pure clinician, there's a very difference being very, I always think that as a dentist, because we're so precise on everything, we're like that everywhere else. Mm-hmm. And then that's not true. Just because you're very precise on like the 1.5 millimeters and all that when you're doing a chamfer edge or something like that, doesn't mean that when you're doing the counting, you're like decimal spaces are going to hit exactly the right point. They just won't, right?
Yeah.
So an important part about business is like, how are you with numbers? Are you a good numbers person? Like, do you do your own finances all the time? Are you super on top of that? That if you are that kind of a person, it's going to be an easier move into ownership, because all the accounting and sitting there in front of a computer watching sheets all day, it's a skill set. And some people, it's very different than playing video games for 3 hours, right? If you have that, it's great. If you don't, and trying, if you want to go into business ownership and you immediately try to take over that part, that's going to be rough. So kind of like what Dr. Horton said earlier, is having a team. If you're going into ownership, understanding if you know off the bat that, hey, certain things I'm not going to deal with, and I'm just going to pay other people to deal with, mm-hmm. because I'm not ready for that part right now, I think that would be an easier aspect. But I still think that ownership is a good thing. But you need to, if you understand that for the next 3 to 5 years, it's going to be a grind, and don't try to think that, oh, dentistry is separate from every other business and all fails and restaurants fail. Like, I can just go in and it's magically going to work. It'll work, but very poorly, right? You're not going to fail. No, I don't think any dentist ever fails. It's just a lot of frustrations. So as long as you're aware and you're like, I'm going to go through, it's going to hurt for the first 3-4 years. If you go from that mindset and then afterwards, it's going to be good. Just like dental school residency, if you think of that as practice ownership, that would be a better thing. The mindset, I would say, what is your mindset? What is your expectations? If you have realistic expectations, and like Dr. Horton said, talk to older docs who've already owned practices. Tell them what you think is going to happen, and then watch them laugh at you. And then move from there, right? I think
there you go.
That's a better idea.
I wouldn't expect you to end it any other way. Well, definitely appreciate you taking the time to educate us from both podcasts. Definitely appreciate you. Just honestly, I know how much you have to do. So thank you so much for taking the time, man.
Thanks. Seeing both you guys.
All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of Tooth Be Told. The opinions on this episode are just that, our opinions. Please consult your dental professional before taking any action with your dental health. If you have any questions about anything you heard on this episode, please contact us at Real Dentist with an S. That's R-E-A-L, dentist with an S at gmail.com. We would be very happy to return any message that we receive, because we love the communication that we have with our listeners.